I am very happy to be here this morning. A little nervous because this is the first time I've preached a sermon in front of a congregation that knew me as a person before they knew me as a person who preached. So I love all of you, and I hope you'll still love me when I'm finished. So as I said, this is the second week of a six-week sermon series using the book Sabbath by Wayne Muller. Last week, Pastor Kayla talked about Sabbath as rest. Rest and prayer are often used interchangeably in the Bible. She shared the story of a busy man who one day collapsed from exhaustion and his realization that when we don't allow time for rest in our lives, illness becomes our Sabbath. Jesus modeled for us this need for rest. There are many passages in the Gospels where we hear of Jesus drawing away from the crowds or drawing away from his disciples and going off to a quiet place alone to pray. And we were reminded last week of Jesus' words to the disciples in chapter 2 of Mark. The Sabbath was made for humans. Humans were not made for the Sabbath. This week, we read the second section of the book, On Rhythm. Muller begins by sharing his experience as he spent months recuperating after nearly dying from pneumonia. He had moved from the high altitude and dry climate of the New Mexico desert to a place near the ocean where the lower altitude and moisture would support his body to continue to heal and regain strength. As he and his wife walked along the ocean, he felt the time was moving in cycles. He writes, "Endlessly, wave after wave, the water climbs up the beach and recedes, threatens and calms, choppy and still, a relentless music of rhythmic change. Driftwood, flotsam, jetsam, shell and stone are tossed up and then swallowed back down. Things come and go, a furiously reliable dance of tidal impermanence. Here, if there is such a thing as time, it surely cannot be linear. Everything begins and ends and begins again." We hear that from the preacher in Ecclesiastes. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. This rhythmicity is what we recognize most often in creation. Nothing in nature is at absolute rest. Everything is in a state of movement, and in all movement, there is rhythm. The grace of universal rhythms is expressed in the phases of the moon, the ebb and flow of the tide, the earth's rotation, the changing of the seasons. In today's contemporary reading, we heard, when we live and work in 24-hour shifts without rest, we are on wartime. We are strong and capable people. We can work without stopping. We can work faster and faster. But remember, no living thing lives like this. Greater rhythms govern our lives. We are part of the creation story, subject to all its laws and rhythms. So when we rest, we surrender to the rhythms of seasons and flowerings and dormancies and savor the richness of life itself. If, as many scientists believe, we are hardwired to live in rhythm, to be in and then step out, to be engaged and then detached, to work and then to rest, then the commandment to remember the Sabbath isn't a burdensome requirement, a must-do from some law-giving deity on high, but is rather a remembrance of a law that is firmly embedded in the fabric of nature, a reminder of the rhythmic dance to which we unavoidably and blessedly belong. In the 18th century, a Swedish botanist became so enamored with the rhythmicity in plants that he grew a garden that could tell time. He planted flowers that opened or closed their blossoms an hour apart from morning to evening throughout the entire day. All life vibrates to inner music. The human body has observable rhythms. the natural movements for the parts of the heart to open and close rhythmically thousands of times a day to pump blood into the heart and throughout the body. The pulsing of blood through our veins, the very act of breathing, in Latin, breath and spirit are the same word. About 16 times a minute, we invite spirit in and say yes to continuing life here on earth as we take another breath. Circadian rhythms approximating 24 hours lie deep in many living things, deep in our bodies. Most organisms have more than one circadian rhythm governing different processes. In humans, the wake-sleep cycle, glandular secretions, raising and lowering of body temperature are some of the systems governed by different circadian rhythms. These rhythms, and these are his words, these rhythms are impervious to alteration and refuse to be extinguished. Animals navigate using their inner rhythms and seasonal information such as tides, blooming vegetation, conditions of the climate, sound, and light to orient themselves. Oysters open their shells when the moon is high and form a new chamber in its spiraled shell each lunar month. Bees respond to the sunlight and orient themselves by the pattern the sun forms in the sky, whether the sky is blue or cloudy. The earth hums. A sound is born when seasonal winds pass over waves and mountains across the earth and sea. A low-frequency pulsation is audible to birds thousands of miles away. Listening to the music of the earth, birds find their way home. And we are blessed with these inner rhythms. It is no wonder, then, that our 50 to 60-hour work weeks, refusing to stop for lunch, bypassing sleep, and working deep into the darkness, interferes with our natural rhythms and keeps us off balance, tired, in a hurry, and often ill-sorted. In 2017, three American biologists were awarded the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine for their discoveries of the molecular mechanisms that control circadian rhythm in organisms. Their research over a period of 30 years and their discovery of small molecules in the brain that empower the circadian rhythm underscores the importance of keeping our circadian rhythms intact. When those rhythms are disrupted, partly through exposure to light at night, the body's ability to recuperate and rest before its cycles are to begin again during daylight hours is disturbed and cannot function properly or fight diseases as well. When watching a dramatic scene in a movie, you will often hear the music gradually get louder and louder and suddenly stop. Rest. Silence. Anything spoken in that silence is heard more clearly, more powerfully, and the words become more potent because they come out of the silence. Or think of Martin Luther King Jr. and the most famous speech of his life. Listen to the cadence, the rhythm of the voice. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last. Even those who cannot quote any other part of his speech can quote that. The rhythm, silences, repetition, and cadence make it easy to remember. During the time of Jesus, Palestine was a place of wonder and anticipation, filled with miracle workers and prophecies of a messianic age. The people knew the end of history must be near. The coming of the promised Messiah would herald in the end times, the eschaton. Into this atmosphere, Jesus came. Jesus, a wise and gifted teacher, whose followers could not help but hear his stories and parables in terms of the prevailing messianic predictions. If Jesus was a messenger of the Spirit, the child of the Creator, divinely ordained and inspired, then Jesus must be the Messiah, signaling the ending of the coming time. They couldn't help themselves. The disciples heard his words and understood them, his teachings, and actions in that eschatological context. understanding Jesus as the one who was signaling the end of time, the teachings of the disciples and apostles of the early church took on a theme of desperate, imminent salvation. Repent. The end is near. Soon, Jesus will return in glory to judge the world. Many of them, including Paul, were convinced that they would still be alive when Jesus returned. That is not what happened, nor did many other predictions by early church leaders about their understanding of the ending or of the coming of the kingdom of God. History is riddled with people, groups, and religions predicting how history would end in their favor while they were alive, accompanied by glee as they watched the destruction of whomever they considered to be enemies. Yet, still today, that doesn't keep us from seeking the promised land, the perfect future, the fountain of youth. Western civilization continues to be obsessed with the end times. As the harbingers of a golden age, and with the help of the miracle of technology, we call our messianic eschatology progress. Progress is the road to a new and improved promised land. At the end of progress comes peak efficiency, superior productivity, elevated standard of living. Nature will be mastered. All will be well, diseases cured, wars ended, a chicken in every pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. We'll strike it rich, hit the jackpot, be on easy street. We're on the glory road, hurtling toward the eschaton. It is an important mission to go boldly where no species has gone before, and there is no time to rest. What we are building for the future is infinitely more important than anything we have now. That must mean if the promised land is the good and perfect place, then where we are right now must be an imperfect place, a defective place. If the future is sacred, then the present is the profane, unholy. Every day we are alive, not yet in paradise, is a problem. Our daily life is another day short of the end time. Today is an obstacle, not yet perfect, a bad day. We have to work hard and long and never rest because our main task is to get out of here. We cannot rest because we are in ungodly territory. The sooner we get into the good and perfect future where we will be happy and at peace, the better off we will all be. The only problem with our efforts is that every time we finally get to the future, it vanishes into the present. Even that doesn't teach us to be more present. Instead, we accelerate faster, straining toward the future, not stopping to see where we are, not pausing to taste the fruits of our labor, thinking our true nourishment will come when we are successful, rich, saved, when it is our turn. Every bit of satisfaction and delight are forever just out of reach. And because we will not be here long, because here is no good, and here is not where we are going, here is dispensable. We despoil our nest. We ruin our air and soil. This is the theology of progress. And at this point, Muller finally interrupts himself with, but we must ask this question. What if we are not going anywhere? What if we are simply living and growing within an ever-deepening cycle of rhythms, perhaps getting wiser, perhaps learning to be kind, and hopefully passing whatever we have learned to our children? What if our life orbits around a God who never ceases to create new beginnings? What if our life is simply a time when we are blessed with both sadness and joy, health and disease, courage and fear, and all the while we work, pray, and love, knowing that the promised land we seek is already present in the very gift of life itself? What if this single human life is itself the treasure hidden in the field, the pearl of great price? What if all the way to heaven is heaven? Sabbath challenges the theology of progress by reminding us that we are already and always on sacred ground. This is the time to live and love and give thanks and rest and take delight. Now is the time to be, to feel what heaven is like, to taste eternity, to rest in the arms of the divine. The time for Sabbath is now. We are already home. The traditional Sabbath always begins at sundown, no matter what time it is that the sun sets. No one gets to wait until they get finished with their work because sundown can't be put off. If we wait until our work is done, we will never stop because our work is never completely done. There is always more to do. Something else that needs to be done. If we refuse rest until we are finished, we will not rest until we die. My older sister Carol sent me a note last week when she sent me my AAA card because I'm her and one other family member on her membership. Carol is an administrator in the Clark County School District, which encompasses Las Vegas and all the communities surrounding it. She is one of the top educational autism experts in the country. She is also from the Sharp genetic pool that has produced way too many workaholics. She could have retired several years ago, but she has put it off several times because what would she do with her time if she didn't go to work? I was kind of concerned about her retiring because I didn't know what she would do with her time when she retired either. Carol works, and works some more. She has now set a date of December this year for her retirement. In her note, she wrote, "My life has turned into one eternal disciplinary write-up for an employee, and now the IRS." Further down, she talked about starting her last extended school year, this summer session. She wrote, "It's easier to claim my retirement now, although it will be very difficult to tell my team and my staff. But it is time." I texted her, thanking her for sending the card. I said, "It sounds like you are ready to retire. I got your letter in the midst of preparing to preach on July 8th. I am preaching the second of a series on a book, Sabbath, which we are reading for a book study. Pastor Kayla is preaching on rest this week." That was last week. "My topic is rhythm for the next week." The premise of the book is that we have gotten away from the concept of Sabbath, a time, any time, of rest from the busyness of life to renew our life. I should probably say here now that Carol declared herself an atheist 50 years ago when she went off to college. She isn't an atheist, but she doesn't worship formally anywhere either. She is, however, the only person in my family who I can get away with talking about faith and religion and who will talk to me in return. I just have to keep it not too preachy. So I continue to text to her, "When our lives are an eternal write-up for an employee," and then we add the IRS, "we are ignoring the inherent rhythm and cadence of life, the ebb and flow, give and take, time to work, time to rest, a time to live, a time to die. If we do not take Sabbath rest for our bodies and minds, take time to listen and be still, we cannot know our inner rhythms that tell us where we are and where we are going. When we stop interfering with those rhythms, our natural state reasserts itself and our natural balance and wisdom return, and we can find our way to what is good and necessary and true. Yes, Carol, perhaps it is time. Time for Sabbath retirement and finding new rhythms in your life. I love you forever." In typical Carol style, she responded, "Thank you. A timely message for me and us all. I appreciate it. But then, is it okay if I share your message?" I told her, of course, and asked if I could share hers. This week I got a text from her out of nowhere, which asked, "Are you still thinking of Sabbath rest?" "I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking all week," she said. "It's a grounding for us, and we need that calm uncoupling from the world to claim peace." Okay, that's as philosophical as I can manage. Wise words about Sabbath from my atheist sister. Sabbath frees us from the need to be finished. We stop because even though our efforts are important and useful, they are not indispensable. The galaxy will somehow be able to manage without us for this time, this hour, this day. And we are invited or commanded to relax and enjoy our humble place at the table in a very large world. The deep wisdom of creation will take care of things for this while. The world continues without us when we stop, and we see that it is good, and we do not need to constantly push. Knowing that, when we stop, we let our eyes rest, our bodies heal, and we taste the fruits of our labor. As the psalmist invites us, be still and know. Surrendering fully into Sabbath time, we can move from a life filled with noise and worries that drown out the gifts and blessings in our life to a life in which we can listen to God, Jesus, all the Buddhas and saints and sages and messengers and sisters who teach and guide us. Muller tells of receiving a gift from his friend, Henri Nouwen, a copy of the Liturgy of the Hours, a collection of prayers that marked each passing hour, day, week, month, and year. Different prayers for different seasons, prayers to begin the day, prayers to settle in for sleep, prayers for time of unspeakable sadness and mourning, and prayers for times of great thanksgiving. Every hour, every possible festival, reason for celebrating, reason not to celebrate, is punctuated with the deep rhythmicity of prayer. Muller keeps that book on his desk, and he says he often turns to the book and looks up the prayer for that hour, the prayer for the day or week. When I stop to pray, he says, I feel my body release, disengage slightly from the rush of activity and progress, and float on the tides of a deeper time, tides that have borne up the lives of all who prayed throughout eternity. Every day, every year circles around the silent turning of cycle and rhythms. At Christmas, we are reminded that God can take birth where and when we least expect it, and to rejoice at the tiniest infant manifestation of the divine. Hanukkah reminds us that in the dark, light is born, and it's never fully extinguished, no matter how hopeless and impenetrable the darkness. The crucifixion reminds us that all things must die, and Easter that all things will be reborn. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur remind us that we must account for our lives, our actions, be mindful of what we have done, atone for our mistakes, and begin again, always anew. In the month of Ramadan, we fast and pray and devote ourselves to a God who will not leave us comfortless. On Sabbath, we rest and remember that we are cared for. Just as our liturgical year repeats, so too our liturgical ritual is meant to be repeated. What is perfect in the liturgy is the repetition, the sheer ordinariness, the familiarity of a place known because we have visited it again and again in so many different moments. It is not about progress or trying to make it better. It is about circles, cycles and seasons, and the way time moves, and things we must remember. Ritual calls us back to the center, back to the breath, a short meditation, a chant, a mantra. With each candle, song, and prayer, we are set free from our concerns, and we rest in the rhythm of eternity, sweeps of time that bear us up in the divine inhale and exhale. The liturgical year tells us you are not going anywhere. Millions have done this before you, and millions will do it after you have gone. When you drink this cup, light this candle, recite this prayer, there is sacredness in it. It is a gift for you to help you remember who you are and to whom you belong. Come and take your rest. So be it.